Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show. On the driving mall to this week, is rugby all postponed? We've also got a bit of a chat about the top league in Japan. There's been a fun red card, which we'll discuss. Don't worry, it's not going to be a half hour deep dive into cards with Boa. We will try and keep it a bit shorter than that. Well, also with all these postponements, what tournaments are actually going to happen this year? This year, we'll have a quick chat and make some predictions around that. But joining me this evening, I've got Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Very good, thank you, Paul. Once again, a privilege and a pleasure to be on the show. Good to see you, Paul.
And Boa as well. How are you doing, sir?
Fantastic. My highlight of the week, as you all know, folks, everyone listening at home, again, thank you very much for tuning in. And Paul, we have some very interesting chatter, what's happening and what isn't. So let's get right
yes,
to
more,
it.
More what isn't happening. Well, before we get right into it, I've got a little quiz for you two, and we'll start with we'll go alternative. I've got the top 5 point scorers for the All Blacks in Test matches. Stephen, can you name number one? The top point scorer for the All Blacks.
I would say Dan Carter would be right up there.
Yep. So Dan Carter is number one. Boa, can you give us number two?
Andrew Mertens?
Yes, spot on. He's number two. Stephen, back for you for number three.
Oh, I'd say I would say Grant Fox.
No, he's not.
Wow.
He's in the top five, but he's not number three. So Boa, can you name number three?
Would it be Jeff Wilson?
Jeff Wilson?
Sorry, I apologize. We're talking try scorers with we outright point scorers.
Point scorers, not try scorers.
I'm going to have a bit of a punt here, and I'm going to say Beauden Barrett.
Yes, Beauden Barrett is number three.
Wow.
Fox is number four, which we've named. So either of you have a guess at number five. Who is the fifth highest scorer? This is one I must admit I was a little bit surprised about.
Is it a first five?
It's a first five, yes.
I think I know it.
Go on, then.
I've got two names I'm thinking about. One is...
That's right, a first and a second name. That's what most people have. So, yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to split the throw on two. Carlos Spencer and Simon Culhane.
Well, no and no. Wow. Yeah, for either of those.
Surprisingly, would it be Richie Maunga?
No, it wouldn't. No, not Richie Maunga either. With 322 points, Aaron Cruden is number five. Bit of a surprise there.
Wow.
So and the All Blacks shared it on their Facebook page earlier today. So thank you to the All Blacks. But there they are. Dan Carter on 1,598. A big gap back to Andrew Mertens on just 967. Didn't quite break that 1,000 mark. Beauden Barrett then 649, and obviously with some time still to go. Grant Fox 645, and then finally Aaron Cruden there on 322. So yeah, I was surprised that Aaron Cruden, but you've got more points than or higher up the list than I expected. I don't think the actual numbers that surprising. I guess it just shows you how few test matches and how 2 points or how 2 points penalties meant they didn't score quite so many points.
And I would say Aaron Cruden has scored some very crucial points, as in some very crucial kicks to actually get the All Blacks into match winning, and also that game against Ireland where Ireland were leading the All Blacks on the hooter, and the All Blacks, I think, was it 27 faces? And the first kick from the left-hand corner was, in fact, illegally charged down. And I remember referee Nigel Owen asking the Irish to retreat back, and the penalty was the penalty against them was they cannot charge the second conversion. Cool as ice. Yeah, Aaron Cruden pings it over. All Blacks home and host.
Well, from memory, he actually missed the first kick. It wasn't actually charged down, but they charged early.
Charged early. That's right. And then Nigel Owen said you couldn't charge because that was the penalty against them for charging early.
Yep.
Bang on. Oh.
So, yes, back in the day. Now, another quick one because is have you seen the red card given to in a Pro Div 2 to the player? What was his name? Josiah Ruske, who was on the visiting side. His side were close, or Nevers were close were leading just 30-25 with time running out, defending their line. The referee whistles in Nevers' favour, and he then picks up the referee in the air in celebration, then puts him down, and gets red carded. What were your thoughts on that one, Stephen?
First of all, when I was watching it, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, for starters. I actually thought it was one of his teammates, and then I thought, my God, he's actually lifted up the referee, gave him a bit of a wedgie, and I thought, this is not going to end well. And that's pretty much what I thought would happen. You can't touch the referee. I know in football, the round ball code, they come down very, very harshly on handling the referee. In fact, the other alternate overboard ball code, rugby league, if you touch or manhandle the referee, you could go for a skate. So no surprise there. It was a little funny. We shouldn't laugh, but it was hilarious.
Yeah, silly and funny, but red card was my view. Bella?
Yeah, look, I did see both red cards from this week. In fact, there should have been a third red card. Thank God there wasn't. The Kyle Sinclair incident with Kyle Dickinson, his former teammate at club level. A bit of swearing, but that's what we're talking about. Yeah, look, bottom line is you just can't touch the ref. It's that simple. You know, I know it was almost like a cherubic little cuddle and lift. So it's gone viral on the internet with the Lion King meme and the theme music to back it up. Look, red card for stupidity and clumsiness. And this brings
clumsy. I think it was quite deliberate. I mean, he wasn't clumsy about it at all. He was very safely putting back down again.
Red card for stupidity, and this is where I think an orange card would have been ideal. Orange card. He'll probably get further sanctioned as well. He'll probably get a couple of weeks. You just cannot lay a finger on the referees. Period. You have to respect the ref. Red card, right call.
On saying all that, the referee Lawrence Milot be a handy guy to chuck up in the lineup. Only a little guy, so you know, chuck him up at the front of the lineup.
Yeah, chuck him up at the front of the line. As Simon says, yeah, it's a shame that that's the only Pro Div 2 coverage outside of France is when basically something goes wrong. Either there's a fight or the red card for something like this. They don't get much coverage for Pro Div 2. As you say, Carl Sinclair swearing at the referee, saying you're effing joking, should also have been a straight red as well.
Gentlemen recall, Dylan Hartley, I think it was four, maybe 5 years ago, in the Heineken Cup, he swore at the world's greatest referee. The world's greatest referee, Wayne Barnes, was a straight red card. So, yeah, again, you know, this sort of indiscipline, it can be tolerated. It's a very bad example. It should have been a straight red card as well. And there's been a lot of opinions on this, but, you just cannot verbally or physically abuse the referee. It's just absolutely
wrong. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Dylan Hartley one, he said, you effing cheat. Now, he claims it was at the opposition player. But if the Wayne Barnes, yeah, I mean, calling the referee a cheat, whereas rather than just actually saying the F word at him, is even worse. Suggesting he's cheating. And let's be honest, Wayne Barnes clearly, not someone who would be a cheat.
No, he's just incompetent at times. That's all.
Ooh, dearie me.
Well, you, I do. I do. I need to go over all those, you know, what are the backward passes and you know. So anyway, moving on.
Well, yes. Well, yes. The so the yeah, Knoxon writes, he says yes, the referee cannot be harassed, though, and he puts there those standards have been sliding the last few years. Absolutely, they have. I would like the referees to crack down on players much, much more than they do now, to be honest. But there you go. That's just my old man opinion.
Interestingly enough, Paul, I've seen a couple of female referees refereeing the Guinness. Is it the Guinness Pro 14 in Europe? And the players seem to show a lot of respect towards the female officials, from what I've seen. That, you know, there's not too much bickering and moaning. It's sort of yes, ma'am, and carry on. So, is there anything in that?
I think it's something that it's unusual for now, and it's but when it becomes more the norm, I think that'll disappear. I think that's part of the getting used to the fact they've got female referees. But as soon as it becomes just the same as anyone else, as any of the men, then I think we'll see them both being treated similarly. Oh. To be honest.
Listen, and I've got to say, they're doing a great job. Sorry, boy, they're doing a really good job. I must make that comment.
No, absolutely. I think, look, there's two folds to this matter. And you're right, I think it was Nocturnal made a comment there saying the standards player on-field discipline has been sliding. Look, there's a couple of things I'd like to actually suggest. Number one is from a professional standards, all clubs, I think, need to put something down in the written contract where if there is player misconduct, quite specific to do with referee abuse, both physical or verbal, there has to be significant repercussions, both from the club. This is outside the judicial sanctioning. And also, one thing I have to say is from a refereeing point of view, over the last maybe 6 to 8 years, we're seeing referees sort of trying to lecture players and give out sermons and just talk too much on the field. I think that needs to be cut down. And as Stephen rightly pointed out, if it's some of the top level professional female referees, we don't see that much chatter. The decision is called and they roll with it, because at the end of the day, the referee is not there to coach the players on the field or tell them what or what not. All they are there is to police the game, call the rules for what they are, and you know, make sure that the rules are enforced in a positive manner. So I think it's really, really important that from a professional players and maybe the union, the professional players union, especially in Europe, can enforce this. This needs to be brought into contract so that there's an additional sanction. If some, like, for example, Kyle Sinclair, I think he'll be fronting a judiciary. He'll be obviously handed a sanction. But again, there needs to be financial penalties from a player's contractual point of view so that this sort of rubbish does not be repeated ever again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There definitely needs to be harsh punishments for these. But we did another fantastic play from, I've gone blank, the French scrum half. DuPont. I don't know if you saw his try assist this weekend.
Yeah, amazing, amazing hands, and clearly playing some of the best form of his life. I think there's been a lot of stuff on the internet go as well, and especially in the Northern Hemisphere claiming him to be the best halfback in the world as we speak. There are certain elements of his game I do agree. It'd be really interesting to see how he goes up against some of the Southern Hemisphere teams. But then I guess that's something we will visit later in the show, see if it's going to happen or not.
So one of the things, folks, that you want to that you need to look out for is this try that weekend where the kick comes through, he chases it, and he one hand bats it. It must be like a 10-meter pass to the winger to go in and score. So yeah, fantastic piece of skill that came off well. Another thing, actually, as Stephen was just trying to guess there about what the name of the tournament was. Yes, the Guinness Pro 14 that only currently has 12 teams in it. That once the South African teams will join it, will have 16 teams in it. So yes, I understand, Stephen, why you were kind of confused as to why it's called 14, but that's why. But yeah, that's it's all a bit of a mess with COVID changing things left all over the place for them.
Well, that's all right. At the best of times, most rugby players and administrators can't count. So, you know, it is what it is.
There's been some interesting injury replacements that have come out today. Stephen, have you seen those? So Josh Mackay, Rennie Ranger for I've gone for Braden Ennor
Fijian winger Manasi Mataeli. Manasa Mataeli, yeah, both of them with similar sort of injuries or pectoral injuries. Josh Mackay, probably not too much of a surprise. But on saying that, we all know he is a quality player. He's a player we've sort of spoken about, who we've sort of heard that maybe there's more things happening off the field that's on. But hey, here's a guy who's given a second chance. And of course, I can think back to the start of the 2019 season, where Rennie Ranger actually flew to Christchurch and spoke to Scott Robertson. Unfortunately for Rennie, in that 2019 season, didn't play any rugby, so I suppose at the end of the day, the Crusaders didn't take the risk. But obviously, through that relationship with Scott Robertson, Rennie Ranger, here you go, playing Super Rugby again for the Crusaders. Although maybe there'd be a few police supporters that might be a little bit upset. But there you go, the Rooster at 35 years old in 2021, playing Super Rugby again. Although he said, I should give Pam a bit of justice, he is 34, not 35, until October later this year.
Well, I think, I think there'll be a bunch of Blues fans actually quite thankful that he's gone to the Crusaders and not to the Blues. Look, to be fair to him, look, fantastic player in his day, but too many injuries, I think, really. And I'm not sure whether, yes, he's an experienced head. He's a guy that will go down there and will work his socks off during training, will be a consummate professional, and will not let the side down if required. But my guess is that he will get very little, if any, game time, and will be is there as kind of the last, just to make sure they've got enough numbers in case of injuries, personally. But yeah.
He's only on the books for a month.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Rennie Ranger. I think if he's fit, wow, he'd be a tremendous impact player. He's done some amazing things, as Paul rightly mentioned, in his day. It'd be interesting to see at a spring chicken like 34 years of age, how he's going to pull up. If he's only there for a month, then he will probably want to leave everything on the field. But again, the big question mark is run-on fitness. Definitely got the experience, no question about it. And I think at Super Rugby level, he's been a juggernaut. He's been incredible. So it's going to be a very interesting experiment and on how Scott Robertson uses him for that month in his squad, where he fits him in and what sort of impact and also the experience and how he's going to tie in with some of the Crusaders' attack patterns. Because the Crusaders, they love to play that sort of 2-4-4-2 and play edge-to-edge rugby. Interesting to see how he goes.
I must admit, the other two players that have been brought in by the Highlanders, Jack Reagan, the Irishman, saw a bit of him during Mitre 10 Cup, look relatively promising. And Sean Whitty, I've got to admit, Paul, I've probably got to go to Google to find out a little bit about Sean Whitty, but I'd say he's probably a promising player from the region. Maybe Nocturnal Rights can probably give us an inside word on that. But obviously, Jack Reagan in there for cover for Putty Parkinson.
There's another player as well that's gone down there, Caleb McInnay from Hawke's Bay is down there as injury cover well. So, quite a few players down there.
And I'll tell you what, another player. Yeah, I just noticed that Nocturnal Rights has said that Slade McDowell is too small for Super Rugby, which I totally disagree with. I can think of Daniel Braid, and both Daniel Braid and Luke Braid not being the biggest loose forwards in the world. Hellsteeth, Duplessis Kariffi is not the biggest seven around. But a player I also forgot to mention as well, who used to play for the Ponsonby Club up here in Auckland. And boy, we've seen a lot of kids out of that Ponsonby Rugby Club basically head into either Mitre 10 Cup rugby and also Super Rugby. Swane Vakona, the hooker who made the Blues, but now we've seen Freedom Vahakalo, who had an outstanding season for Otago as well, who has made the Highlander squad, and that's well deserved, isn't it, Boar?
Absolutely. I think he's going to have a stellar season. He might end up being one of the breakthrough players on the season. No question about it. Great rugby sense. And if you look at his running lines off the ball, that's where he brings a real X factor. He knows when to get involved. I've been very consistent in harping on about how great players inject themselves into the game at the right time, knowing which lines and which shortcuts to take. You know, very much like Aaron Smith. If you look at Aaron Smith, where he really started coming to his own was when he started doing the front running, where he moved the ball at width. He trusted his guys on the outside to make the gain line, and he was running well in front and almost hitting that flat pass. And someone who caught onto that was TJ Perinara, taking very similar lines. And there's been countless instances where the All Blacks have scored tries where they attack with and get that inside pass. So I think with Freedom, he's probably doing more or less those same little things off the ball, making sure that he gets involved at the right time. So very exciting times, and someone I think who is going to play a major role for the Highlanders this season in Super Rugby.
Cool. And I've not seen anything from sort of the North Island teams about injury replacements to the Hurricanes, Chiefs or Blues. So we'll just have to wait and see what comes out from those. As I've not seen anything so far. If you have, then do let us know in the live chat, folks.
Paul, just on Jack Reagan, he came through the Ulster system. So it'll be interesting to see if given the opportunity in Super Rugby to see how he progresses.
Yes, so something I was...
A couple of Irish people down there now in South Island. There was a prop down in one of the South Island teams as well last season from memory. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, something I would say is there's a pattern, both coaching as well as playing, coaching staff and players. The South Island franchises have a knack to pull in people from that Irish system, i.e. Ulster and Leinster. So, yeah, it'll be quite interesting to see how this gentleman integrates himself. And obviously, the Highlanders have done some very good planning, because looking at their squad, I think it's a very complete squad. In fact, I've named them as my long shot or the value bet to win Super Rugby Aotearoa 2021. So, yeah, I think very interesting times ahead. And one thing I have to say is I saw that video of the Blues at the Davenport Naval Base having an off-season run through the mangroves. And boy, that looked tough. As someone who spends a lot of time trimming back and doing a bit of conservationist work on the where I live out here in Tapakura, on the mangroves, I can tell you, gentlemen, that is hard work. That is extremely hard work. And some of the boys are really struggling. So hopefully that's not a sign of things to come for the Blues fans. They pull up well, but yeah, it looks like all the franchises are really into their work. Lots of Broncos, lots of off-season work. And can't quite remember who the player was, came within 3 seconds of breaking Borden Barrett's Bronco record at the Blues.
That was Jonathan Ruru.
Jonathan Ruru. There you go.
With that very, very impressive effort. I was going to say that mudflat kind of reminded me of Carisbrook down in Dunedin back in the 90s and 70s during the middle of the winter. It kind of looked like porridge. So,
I tell you what, mate, those mangrove mud, it stinks. Trust me. I have one of those suits where, you know, where you submerge yourself in the sewers. I wear that when I go trim out some mangroves where I live, and man, it stinks. So, yeah, it was interesting to see those fancy Blues merchandised training gear getting a good workout. Hopefully they get to wash it and reuse it.
Well, moving on from Boa's sewer suit, some people may be saying that we're mixing with sewer rats by talking with the investment companies that apparently is happening with. Obviously, we've seen CVC take investments in the Pro 14, the Guinness Premiership, and are reportedly in talks with the Six Nations about taking a stake in that. And it looks like that the New Zealand Rugby is going down a different route in discussions with Silver Lake to sell a 15% stake in the All Blacks going forwards. Apparently, New Zealand Rugby is valued at approximately $2 billion. So that 15% would equate to $30 million for that investment by looking at, by my figures. So not a small amount of cash, but also perhaps not at 30 million. I mean, what we were talking about, was it 100 million in reserves that New Zealand Rugby had at one point? And obviously they burnt a lot with this, with COVID. Was it 10 million reserves? But yeah, it, perhaps not as big a number as I mean, it is a big number, obviously, but perhaps not a bigger number as some people might think about.
Yeah, look, valuing businesses is an interesting sort of process altogether. It'd be really interesting to see that number, 2 billion, what is actually valued as tangible assets and what is attributed to goodwill of the branding and trademarks they own. So look, guys, the reality is private equity is going to be playing a huge and crucial role in professional sport, not just rugby, but all professional sports going forward. The European leagues, especially the French clubs, they are very proactive and they're doing a very good job with professionalizing the sport, bringing in private equity. And if you recall, Augustin Pichot, the unsuccessful World Rugby chairman candidate, one of the key elements he was looking at was bringing in more private equity to the game and looking at diluting some of those funds to the Pacific Islands and some of the unions which really needed the cash. But you have to understand, guys, one of the pitfalls of professionalizing the game is that we will see the amateur side of the game start to thin out in certain areas over a period of time. Hopefully, New Zealand Rugby, with this cash injection, and I hope they get every cent they've set out and bargained for, some of that money actually is put into clearly set out and defined programs which target the grassroots so that more player participation, more volunteer participation, and also make the game safer, more player, referee, administrative education can go on. And you know, we can actually look at fortifying the grassroots level of the game.
But when you think that the CDC is looking at 365 million for 14.5% of the Six Nations, which would equate to 60 million per country. That looks, that's sterling, not US dollars. So that's a different currency, which doesn't help. I was going to say it's twice what New Zealand Rugby is going to get, but actually with that being a different currency, that doesn't work. But yeah, look, it's still serious amounts of cash flying around. But what you are doing is you are selling off essentially your future income. So whilst you get this windfall now, you spend it, but that means your income is going to be 15% less over the next however many years. If you're selling off a permanent stake, then it's forever. And that money is going to go somewhere else. So interesting to see that taking that move. Yeah. Is it worth? What's worth? What's can you invest it enough that you create a bigger return than that 15%? Every year, going forwards, or are you actually losing out in the long run? It'll be interesting. It's a difficult one to figure out, but yes, interesting.
Paul, Paul, I was about to say, in terms of Silver Lake, obviously they're a global private equity firm. They're focused on what investments, technologies, things like that. But they're only, just basically on Google, they're only 21 years old. It's a real interesting one. But I suppose in the market that we've got at the moment, one one thing that the New Zealand Rugby Union has got going for it, we're actually going to, hopefully, if we remain COVID-free, unlike, you know, some of the other competitions we'll get to shortly, at least we're fortunate enough to actually see some rugby, so that's something that they've got on side whilst negotiating.
True,
and yeah, no,
is the situation we're in is fantastic. We look at New Zealand cricket, for example. They were expecting on making a serious loss this year because the test matches they had lined up were against teams that they traditionally lose money against. In the end, they've had bumper crowds against West Indies and Pakistan, and they've ended up making, actually, they're in the black, they're not making a loss, which is, so yeah, it's the situation that the New Zealand sporting organisations find themselves in is by far is a very good one, a very strong one in the global market space.
Yeah, gentlemen, what I was going to say was, if NZR or any New Zealand sporting body, particularly to NZR because of the branding and trademarks they own, they should have no problem attracting even bigger investment, i.e. more private equity. And it could end up being something like Mark Robinson ending up going to something like the Dragon's Den or the Shark Tank and presenting a case study where they bargain and have a negotiation. And really, from an investment point of view, I mean, having been a serial entrepreneur all my life, for an investor, the attractiveness of a business is the equity stake they have and how they maximize the return on investment. So this is where private equity firms will use things like innovation, bringing new technology and new avenues of income, which traditional organizations would have otherwise not thought about. So there are some significant pluses as well. But at the same time, organizations like NZR can't lose sight of the fact that the game survives and evolves around that grassroots, and some of that money, in fact, a major portion of that money, will need to be pumped back into the grassroots to make sure that we have wider participation. And given that we are in a COVID-free environment, you know, some of these larger private equity owners, for them, it's a bit of a gamble. It's a bit of a punt. So for a better swap of lifestyle coming down to a country where it's COVID free, it's kind of like some of these rich owners of the syndicates in the Americas come. Hey, come down to New Zealand, enjoy the lifestyle. Make sure you bring your cash, load up NZR, and in turn, the game will thrive.
Yep. You know, guys, despite a sort of rough year for the CEO, Mark Robinson, he's a pretty smart cookie. He was educated at Cambridge University, so I think he's got a few clues. He'll know exactly what he wants and what's required financially for the game. And just given the market that we've got at the minute, I think sometimes it might be a case of take what you're given. And I know where Paul's coming from with the negotiations that's going on in around Six Nations rugby as well. But boy, even for sponsors, it must be nervous times.
Oh, the strong brands like the All Blacks will always find sponsors. That's for certain. I'm going to reserve judgment on the current CEO of New Zealand Rugby. I've not. There's definitely been certain aspects of their negotiations and how they've treated partners recently that I haven't agreed with. So we'll see. Maybe he is getting it right, but we'll have to wait and see. Moving on then. So this weekend, we've already lost the Heineken European Champions Cup and the European Challenge Cup. Now, both of those competitions have been suspended indefinitely. So that means these next two rounds of games are not going to happen. But they are hoping to schedule those later in the season. Quite how they're going to do that when there are no open weekends, I've got no idea. The top 14 apparently are looking at playing some games this weekend, but I've not seen a schedule yet as to which ones they're going to play. The Gallagher Premiership has said they will take 2 weeks off. When you think, actually, you know what? Why couldn't they have brought games from later in the season to these two weekends? The teams are ready to play, and then you open a window later in the season. But nope, they're not going to do that. A bit of pigheadedness, it seems like to me. We'll see what the Pro 14 is doing. I've not seen any reports from that. But whole bunch of cancellations there. Also, this weekend was supposed to be the Top League kicking off in Japan. We already, as Rich Freeman, who is the preeminent English writing reporter of the Top League, has already said, they already have their first two results before the weekend even starts, because they've had two games cancelled, which means 2-0 on draws for those already. That's going to be a record, hasn't it, Boa? Managing to get results in before your competition's even started?
Yeah, punter's dream, you know. I always think, can I get a Sunday paper on a Friday so I can make sure I place my bets nice and early for Saturday's races? But hey, that's never going to happen. So yeah, I think three teams, Suntory, Sun Goliath, Toyota, Wablitz, and Canon. Those three teams, 60 players and officials testing positive. Japan, with privacy laws, they don't actually come out and say who's got it. And the fourth team, they've said two players have tested positive pre-announcement. So, what's happening in Japan? I mean, I think the Japanese government in certain areas require their citizens to wear a mask whilst they're staying indoors in their own house. So, yes, the risk is huge. And the same thing, you know, right around these European leagues, I think the French government came out and said, you know, rugby, any type of sport for the next month, nothing doing. So these guys are taking a massive risk, and trying to mix and mingle all these leagues across Europe guys, the risk is just too great because unknowns are immense. And as soon as something goes wrong, the rugby as a whole will take a massive amount of flack. So I think a bit of sanity needs to prevail, and it has to be a bit more of a wait and see approach.
Go on, Stephen.
Paul, I was going to say, with the postponement of the Premiership, probably the most frustrated man around would probably be Pat Lamb, with Bristol on a bit of a roll and a 4-point lead in the Gallagher Premiership, and of course handing Exeter their second consecutive loss, which mate, we haven't seen for a very, very long time, and who would have thought Newcastle Falcons be sitting there in second place? So yeah, some crazy things happening. So those coaches, you know, competitions are all about momentum, and when you do take a bit of a break, it's hard to get that momentum again. We saw a perfect example of a team that probably needed a break to start a Super Rugby last year. The Highlanders started really badly, and coming back the second time under the Super Rugby Aotearoa, they looked like a completely different team.
Well, yeah, so did the Chiefs, who
they're the other way.
They did it.
Couldn't buy it.
They did the switch.
Yeah, switcheroo.
And then, Steve, you make a very valid point regarding the Bristol Bears. And also, I think Pat Lamb fought tooth and nail to get Semi Radradra available. not letting him go on for some training in Fiji. So he got his way. And then, hello, COVID comes along. So, yeah, it's a bit of a bummer for Bristol, who've been playing some tremendous rugby. But it is what it is, and who knows, some of the teams who've been struggling and, you know, who've been wallowing at the bottom of the ladder, might be a good chance for them to reset, look at some of the, because I speak to most of these coaches and analysts from Europe on a very regular basis. They do spend a lot of time analyzing video, and in the process, you know, I get a chance to work with some of these guys and send some stuff through, and it's a great learning environment. So these guys have been overdrive. So it's an untimely reset for some clubs, such as the Falcons and the Bears. But at the same time, for the other opponents, for example, Exeter Chiefs, who's starting to see a bit of a slump, good chance for them to reset and come back better.
And a couple of guys playing really well for Bristol as well. Charles Piatau, he must be probably one of the most dangerous backs, outside backs in the Gallagher Premiership at the moment. And a guy who I've been hugely impressed with, and we know him from his days here at Suburbs here in Auckland, is Nathan Hughes, who's played a few games for England. Boy, he has been a beast on the back of the scrum. And, you know, great to see the Stephen Luatua adding some great value. And, of course, the evergreen John Arfoa still running around or doing the business at scrum time. And boy, came up with some real key scrums in the closing minutes against Exeter. That was a really good game of footy. It was a stronger squad. Exeter had actually put put on the paddock this time, but it was a good competitive game, you know, in testing conditions.
Yeah, we are seeing a lot of more competitive games. I think it was in the Wasps game where there was 14 tries scored. So yeah, in trying conditions, I think all teams are looking at varying their tech, because this has been a theme over the last 3 weeks. Talking to a number of these analysts, these teams are actually trying to vary their tech. They're trying to focus more ball in hand as opposed to look at getting kick gain meters. So we are starting to see some interesting trends coming up. So a bit unfortunate that this whole COVID thing's come up, but I think we are going to see more and more disruptions, because I was listening to Professor Michael Baker on Talkback Radio today. You know, man spoke some incredible sense, and with this new strand coming up, and how the vaccine rollout works and how the compatibility and adaptability of this virus, it is going to be extremely difficult for countries in Europe to combat this. And by mixing, you know, three leagues across Europe, it's only going to increase the risk. So very interesting times for professional rugby in Europe, that's for sure. And keep in mind, the British and Irish Lions might just give the Springboks their dream come true for next year. They might try a beer tour.
Okay, then. So predictions, boys. We're going to go through the competitions that are coming up this year. And I want to have your – will they go ahead – Will they go ahead, or, and if they do go ahead, will they complete? But before that, Stephen.
Yeah, I've got a quick question. Is moving forward, and I know it's probably fair to say, if you probably look at one of the more consistent coaches in the Gallagher Premiership, you'd probably have to say the Exeter Chiefs coach Rob Baxter, who's probably been one of the better coaches around. But boy, is somebody like Pat Lamb, if he keeps going on this trajectory, is he a future England coach, guys?
I think he's a future international coach if he can find a team that will pay him more than Bristol will. He was very clear that one of the reasons for going to Bristol from Connacht was the fact that he was going to get paid more. Whilst he's getting paid extremely well, whilst he's enjoying it there, whilst he's being successful there, why move? So, I see him as an international coach at some point. But the Bristol Bears have got very, very deep pockets, or the owner does anyway. And if he wants to keep Pat Lamb, I think he will do.
Yeah, and Pat's got enough. You know, he's in a great spot there at Bristol, and he's carved a little bit of a niche. I think he's created that very unique culture. And you're absolutely right, Stephen. As far as Rob Baxter, you know, bringing the Exeter Chiefs from a very average outfit to a very consistent team. So, very interesting to see Pat Lamb. My gut feel is that he's going to be at Bristol for as long as he can, because, you know, he's doing great things and he's building his legacy there. So wait and see.
So then, as the competition that has got the least games left to play, with just 3 games left in the Currie Cup, they're going to take this weekend off, and it's semi-finals weekend after, followed by a final. Boys, do you see the Currie Cup being able to complete?
Nope, it's done and dusted. The political sit rep in South Africa will deal to it. And things, you know, with this new strand spiraling out of control, a number of countries have come out and said, no, we're not letting any planes or ships coming in from South Africa into the country. So, you know, there's going to be a mini political crisis if this is not contained. And I don't think rugby is going to be used as a vehicle to deepen it. So I can't see it happening. For me, it's an absolute no.
Wow. Stephen?
Yeah, I'd probably go along with that. I mean, so I'm just looking at the playoffs at the stage. They're listed on January the 24th. We don't know what's going to happen between there and then. I got a quick shout out to the Griqualand West, who played Free State at home, and they must have been crying. They had a great opportunity to knock over the Free State Cheetahs, and I think it was the first time in about 20 odd years. And even with the Cheetahs being down to 14 players, they still basically couldn't take the opportunity to take that win. But just the way things are projecting or going in South Africa, I don't know if that competition could be absolutely done and dusted. I've got to just say, it's pretty damn weird watching Curry Cup at this time of the year.
Yes. yeah, I mean, they've always said that they can't start Super Rugby this early because it's too hot, and yet they're playing Curry Cup. I think they will finish. Look, they've only got three games left to go. I think they'll sneak it through with just 2.5 weeks left. I think they'll just sneak it in before it's finished. So I'll go against you guys there. Pro 14, then, the next one that's going to finish with across country in Europe. Personally, I can't see that one finishing. Boys, your thoughts? I think that's dead.
No, same thing. I mean, you know, this outbreak is starting to really hit hard. And again, you know, COVID, unfortunately, has become quite political. And depending on which side of the fence you are, if you support those in power, you know, no, there's no COVID, everything is fine. But if you're on the other side and you don't support those, oh, it's the worst, it's the plague. So, you know, there's just so much at stake. And of course, from a player welfare point of view, I think we need to actually put that and forget about all these other sideshows. And no, I don't think it's going to happen. And it's another no from me.
Paul, Steve? Just according to the TriBet app, the next round of games isn't until January the 31st. So just a wait and see. A lot of water under the bridge before then.
No, I think well, the Pro 14, the Premiership, and the Top 14. Well, the Pro 14 and the Premiership in particular, I think, are both haven't got a hope of finishing. Unfortunately, with the situation there, I think France has got a slightly better handle on it. So I think the Top 14 might have a chance, but I don't think the UK based ones will. And I think that basically also rules out the Six Nations, even though. With the Six Nations, you've got much smaller squads. You can bubble up for a shorter period of time, but and the amount of cash that comes in from the Six Nations means I think they'll do everything they can. But Bo,
well, the Women's Six Nations has been I think postponed, and but I think
but the big difference between the women's and the men's one is women for four of the countries are amateurs, so you can't bubble them up. Whereas with the on the men's side, because they're professionals, they don't have to do day jobs. You can just say, mate, you're sat in that hotel and you're only allowed in the hotel grounds apart from playing the game, and you're tested every day. So it's a different situation with the women's game because of that.
I get that, but my gut feel, and just talking to some of my contacts at the IFU, it's just probably going to be a bit of a precursor purely because the NHS, some of the guidelines which they've issued, we've seen some of the English Premier football games being postponed as well. So there's lots of stake here, guys. And yeah, it looks like that's going to be a precursor. Best chance, Jack, is that if they get the bio bubbles, bang on, there are no breaches, everyone does their thing, and you know, behave as if they're in a luxurious prison. Do their thing, turn up for training, don't mix and mingle, don't break those bubbles. We may see some of these games behind closed doors. So, fingers crossed, but for me, 50-50.
You could arguably say some of the most delighted teams will be Argien in the French Top 14, Gloucester in the Premiership, Glasgow, and Treviso in the respective Guinness Pro 14, because they're all sitting well and truly at the bottom of the table. So they're probably thinking, yay, our reprieve.
Well, yeah, there's some of that. You've got to say that, I mean, it's been a long time that Glasgow has finished beneath Zebre, which is amazing. So, yeah, so the Six Nations is a maybe, but unlikely, because, as you say, they can do those bubbles. The British and Irish Lions, well, when the British and Irish Lions didn't print the date of the year on their merchandise, that was a good sign that it was not going to happen this year. Let's be blunt. But I just can't see how they can delay it a year, and the impact has on everything else, to be honest with you.
I think it's 432 days and counting since the Springboks winning the World Cup, which haven't played rugby. I think it's going to end up being more like 1,000 days in between World Cups before they start playing, and they'll find every excuse not to play this. And yeah, great telltale sign, not printing the year on your merchandise with Spotting Paul.
Well, a lot of people in the to be honest, I've heard that on a lot of podcasts. There's numerous people have said it in the UK. To be honest, as I don't actually have any of the merchandise, I didn't spot it because this one here does have a date on, as you can, and if you probably can't, you won't be able to see because it's too small. But yes, this one from the this is from the Australia tour. This one, but I think the Lions are out. Super Rugby AU and Super Rugby Aotearoa though. Those two should go ahead, shouldn't they? I'm backing those two to actually happen.
No question. And I think we're going to see some very exciting rugby, just the way everyone's preparing, talking to some of the coaches as well. I think this is going to be a bruising Super Rugby Aotearoa 2021. And I think we're going to see some incredible standards, some great footy. Hopefully the Australian version can also live up to that in their own way. But yeah, no questions. Hopefully, we don't have any situations at the border. Managed isolation goes according to plan. I mean, after all, it is our tax money which is keeping everyone in check, and all these public servants who issue advice to us in general public. You know, we pay them, so we better listen to them and make sure that we don't make any stuff ups. And I think we're going to see tremendous Super Rugby Aotearoa. Super Rugby AU, probably, you know, in their own way, it's going to be exciting. So bring it on. Can't wait.
And I think, look, there is a possibility that we'll see some disruption of Super Rugby AU, but I still think it will go ahead. Yep.
I tend to agree with you guys. I think New Zealand, as long as our border control still remain strong, there's no community outbreak, I think we'll be pretty good, but I don't think we can get complacent as a nation as well, guys, especially when it comes to the community outbreak, because I think it will only take one community outbreak in Auckland and I can see us going straight back into level four, beg your pardon. As for Australia, we're already seeing in the Big Bash at the moment, the Sydney teams are actually playing out of state. Ironically, the 76ers and the Thunders, who are leading that particular competition, are both playing out of New South Wales at the stage because of a COVID lockdown of sorts in New South Wales. And I think we could probably see something similar during the Australian season. So it might be a little bit unlucky for maybe a team like the Waratahs, or maybe even, dare I say it, the Reds. They could probably get locked out of their states and maybe forced to basically play out of state. So let's hope not. Let's look at it in a more positive light, and hopefully we can get some rugby, because I think for Australian rugby sake, I think a lot of their promising players that they unearthed during 2020 need to be out playing Super Rugby again in 2021.
Yeah, as Aaron says, Super Rugby crossover could be in jeopardy if COVID expands in Australia. Now, look, I think with the way things are, we're not going to see the travel corridor that we were hoping for between Australia and New Zealand. So I think we'll have to the crossover competition will have to be either in Australia or in New Zealand, is my guess there. So I think I think they'll look at trying to make it happen, but it may not happen in the format that has been suggested so far.
Yeah, one thing I would say, especially with COVID and us being not getting complacent here in New Zealand, with what we are doing at community rugby level, obviously pre-season is in full swing now here in New Zealand, especially my club out in Manuka, we are taking a number of precautions to make sure that we still continue with some of those protocols. Where, you know, players bring their own bottles, there's no sharing of drink bottles, and just little things like that, you know, just to make sure that we stay on top of this, where we are proactive and those good behavioral habits continue, so that even if in the unlikely event there is an outbreak, we're ready for it, and it doesn't hinder things too much, because I'll tell you what, at grassroots rugby, nothing is more worse than for these players than to not play any rugby. You know, they all get very itchy and the message board goes buzzing all the time. So, I think, Stephen, absolutely right. We can't get complacent. We have to stay on top of this. And if there are, you know, basic hygiene protocols everyone needs to adhere to, they should do it. Nice and simple.
Now, Mike, just before you say Happy New Year, though, Stephen, as the one person outside of Auckland, I will be getting hold of my MP now and saying, build a wall along the top of Bombay's, so that when you guys have your outbreak, we can just close the gate and we'll be fine. Sorry, go on.
Good on you, Paul. And we thought you loved us, but there you go. Look, don't let a little bit of COVID get in between a relationship, mate. Speaking of relationships, just want a big shout out to Manasi Kuyalelenoa. Manasi, last time I saw you, and that was only a few days ago on FB, you were lying in a hospital bed. So I hope you're all good at this time, my man. Manasi, a very, very good halfback who played for Bombay and Mount Wellington in the Auckland club competition. Stay well, my brother. Ngā mihi o te tauho, and I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Crossover games could be, Aaron makes a good point there, that obviously with the Australian borders open to New Zealand, the teams would be able to go over there and play. Obviously, when they came back, they would have to go through the 14-day quarantine. But since the All Blacks went to Australia last year, but maybe the Wallabies or the Super Rugby teams could come to New Zealand this year. As a reply, we'll see how that all pans out. Not to worry, we'll have to see about where vaccines are and where we are by June, July. I think that's one of the things that 2021 has taught us is that we can looking more than a couple of weeks ahead in these kind of things can become very can be very, very difficult to predict how those things happen. So, but I guess one of the things I guess out of all this is what we're basically saying is, look, the players down here are going to get game time. The players in Europe are potentially going to struggle. So South Africa, obviously, they say are not looking like much. So you never know. That means the Rugby World Cup surely then is going to be a Wallabies All Blacks final, as no one else will have played and no one else will be progressing their game. So the Rugby World Cup 2023 in France will be won by Australia or New Zealand. That's my prediction.
Yeah, well, the Springboks are going to be way out of luck because they will come up with the excuse saying they need 500 minutes of first-class rugby to compete at any level. So that's not going to happen. I think they will go very successfully World Cup to World Cup with playing zero to very little rugby. It's going to be very interesting. Very, very interesting times ahead. Purely from a high-performance preparation point of view. Because at what point, do a union like the Springboks, no, guys, we actually need to start playing some rugby. We need to actually test the waters and see where we're at. So, big question mark.
But as you say, the problem though there is that rugby is so intrinsically linked with politics and with the outbreak that they're having. Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
It does make you wonder if South Africa actually missed the trick not playing in the Rugby Championship, guys. Just saying, they had that opportunity to be there, and you know, I actually think they might have missed the boat. But hey, just saying, I just want to mention a couple of other quick things as well, guys. Sevens Rugby. I was talking to the senior coach of Takapuna, and he mentioned that one of his players was about to sign a New Zealand Sevens contract this week. Very promising Moses Leo, but there were four spots open in that New Zealand Sevens team. I know Brady Rush from Northland also very close to maybe putting pen to paper with the New Zealand Sevens squad. But boy, where is the Sevens? Okay, we're signing. You might be signing one of these contracts, looking at your future. But what is the future of Sevens at the minute, fellas?
Well, clearly, look, with New Zealand being about the only team, or perhaps the USA as well, but the only two countries left in the world that still actually have a professional sevens team, as it's been scrapped in a lot of countries, that the Olympics. So, plan as though it's going to happen, even if it doesn't, because, hey, there's gold medals on the table there, and those are rare as hen's teeth, let's be honest, for small countries.
Yeah, look, sevens rugby, I think, is going to have a very, very tough time coming up ahead. Very, very difficult period, purely because short tournaments, couple of days, weekends, and with the biological bubble quarantine rules, and travel restrictions, it's simply not practical. And of course, for me, I think the biggest turning point, the biggest signal in all this, the turning of sevens and more focus onto the 15s, was recall when Adi Sevilla pulled out of his sevens contract and said, "No, I want to be an All Black. I want to be playing the 15s game." And clearly, with the 15s really dominating things, and with Super Rugby Aotearoa being the showpiece of all first-class rugby right around the world, uninterrupted purely because of COVID, etc. I think from a player's career point of view, pursuing the 15s and wanting to be All Black is a no-brainer. So really interesting, but you can't knock people for wanting to be part of something. So I wish all these players who are signing up for the sevens all the very best. It's going to be, at times tricky and frustrating times, some of these players, because all they can actually do is play tournaments within New Zealand. So,
Okay, guys, just before we go, we started with a quiz pool.
Well, so no, sorry, go. Just going back a second. Good point by Aaron here. So what will Caleb Clark do? Well, yeah, not just Caleb Clark, but we also had Karoi from the Highlanders, I think, was also had a sevens contract, mm-hmm. and a couple of others as well. I think he'll play Super Rugby and will. But, the lure of a Olympic gold medal, why not keep your eye on it, because there's not going to be, we just said, we don't expect a lot of 15s test matches to be played. I know that New Zealand wants to play 15 games this year. I just can't see that happening. So hence, hey, if somehow they make Tokyo happen, why not? Would be my say.
And guys, we started with a quiz. I want to end with a quiz, but I'll be the Taskmaster this time. What we're basically looking at, fellas, is the most number of games played by a Super Rugby player. And we're talking top nine here. I will give you a clue. Paul, we'll start with you. Number one. Most number of Super Rugby games. Pardon?
Just Kiwis or across all countries?
No, across all countries. And I'll give you guys a clue.
So Croczilla, number one.
Yep, spot on. I'll give you a clue as well. Number two, played for the Chiefs. What?
Number two, please. Jono Gibbs?
No. Paul? It was the least forward.
Well, I'll go Sam Kane, but it's not. Kane.
No good. That comes back to the house. It was Liam Messon.
Liam Messon.
Number three, I'll go to you, Boa. This man played for the Blues and the Chiefs, absolute legend. Played in the front row. That's your quick clue.
Oh, I was going to say played fullback. Okay, no.
Played in the front row, Boa.
Who's in Chiefs? Played in the front row. Oh, I'm having Blues. A blank moment here.
Absolute.
Pass, Paul.
I was going for Mills Mulyanga.
Yeah, same, fullback. Yeah, okay, Mills.
Okay, fastest answer. Played hooker.
Are we talking former Tongan captain?
Comes back to the house. He was a former All Black as well. Played for the Chiefs and the Blues.
Oh, come on. You gotta
Kevin Mealama didn't play for the Chiefs, did he?
Yeah.
Boom, he did. Yes, he did.
He did?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Number three was a former Australian captain who played hooker.
Moore.
Yep.
Stephen Moore. Yep.
Number five is a former All Black midfielder. He's a bit of a legend, and he played for three different New Zealand franchises.
Martin Noni.
Yep, correct. Six is a former Australian lock who played for both the Reds and the Force.
Nathan Sharp.
Yes, spot on. Number seven, a former South African loose head prop who played for the Sharks, and he's a dual World Cup winner.
Oh, the Beast. Boss, Oslo Rant.
Well, who said the Beast?
I said the Beast.
Yes, you're right.
Ding,
and the other two we won't worry about. We'll come up with another we'll come up with another play next week, guys. But hey, well done.
The scary thing is I feel like I know more about the Wallabies than the All Blacks.
I know. They're living rent free in your head, boy.
I must say that fact eluded me. I didn't realize Kevin Mealamu played for the Chiefs. Well, I thought he was through and through Otahuhu and the Blues.
Doug Hewlett played for the Highlanders. I think he played for the Highlanders, the Blues, and maybe the Hurricanes. I seem to be corrected on that.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another player that I would have said, yeah, was Blues through and through. But there you go. Cool. Thank you very much, guys, for joining me. We'll be back to next week at 8 p.m. on Tuesday for the Driving More show. With all rugby basically being cancelled, I'm really not sure what we are going to talk about. So, folks, I'm going to throw this open to the listeners. Please email me, paul@nzsportradio.com, or tweet me or Facebook message me with your questions, and we'll have a Q&A session from the from the listeners and from the viewers. Any questions you have, rugby related, by the way, because I've had questions like who's your girlfriend and stuff before on the live chat. So we'll just keep with them. We'll just keep with the rugby related, please, folks. And we'll have a Q&A next week. Plus, obviously, anything that comes up over the next 7 days. Boa and Stephen, put your thinking hats on for topics for next week, because, hey, as I say, it's going to be lean pickings, I think, at the moment.
Could be a quiz night, and Doug Hewlett did play for the Hurricanes as well. So three different franchises.
Yeah, I think it's great, great initiative, Paul. You and listeners, you ask, we answer. So there you go.
And has anyone played for all five provinces in New Zealand?
That is a very, very good question, Paul. I'm pretty sure there is. I'm pretty sure there is a player that's played.
I would say no. There's the one that played for four, and just not the Crusaders, because the Crusaders refused to play for anybody else, and vice versa. So, let us know, folks, if you know of any players who have played for all five provinces. Nocturnal Rights is greatest All Blacks of all time. We've done that before, but hey, we could roll that one out as well if there's nothing, if we run out of topics or ideas. But folks, thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you very much, Boa. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. Thank you, everyone who's joined us in the live chat, and everyone who listens. We do really appreciate the fact that you do join us every week.